right, guys. Welcome back to Beyond the Barbell. We're at Wadapalooza. Beyond the Barbell is brought to you by Reebok, the official sponsor of CrossFit and the CrossFit Games. I am Ben Alderman.
Thank you, Ben. I'm Blair Morrison. We're here with Pat Barber, all-around OG, the first man to make beards sexy in CrossFit. He's currently the head of coaching development at NC Fit, a Progenics athlete, and a seven-time CrossFit Games veteran. Welcome to the show, Pat.
Glad to be here.
Yeah, it's a long time coming, man. I feel like we wanted you on the show for a while. We just kept missing each other.
Yeah, I know you guys are up further north, and when you're in California, it's like, why would you drive further north from anywhere where I'm from? So, yeah.
Is that me, Ben?
Yeah, a little bit.
That's all right.
I got you.
A little hot. My bad. It's my voice. It's too
high.
Well,
it's not necessarily further north. We're just inland. We're east.
Aren't you northeast, though?
We're still north. We're north.
I guess slightly
north.
Check
your maps.
like maybe a degree.
Yeah. Well, it's a long time coming. Glad I'm here.
It's true. And I, as I recall, just to set the record straight, we have come to your gym on multiple occasions. Ben, has Pat ever been to your gym?
No.
He's never been to my
gym. Yes, I have. I've taught two seminars at your gym.
Yes, he has.
He was paid to go to your gym.
Yeah.
He was paid to go.
He was paid.
Yeah.
That's all right. I'll take it as a win. Okay, so we redo the intro. Seven times CrossFit Games athlete, two times CrossFit Iron Mile visitor, Pat Barber.
There
Welcome to the show.
All right, Pat, so talk to us about what's going on in your life now. You got a family that's growing, right?
Yeah, growing family. I got a 4-year-old boy and a 1-year-old boy. He just turned one a couple days ago, and that is spectacular and all-consuming, as you know.
Yep.
Other than that, I'm doing coaching development full-time for NC Fit, and we've got it to the point where I'm actually developing coaching developers, so it's like that next layer of fun.
And these are coaches that coach for NC Fit, not just in the California Bay Area, but all over the world, right?
Correct. Yeah. I mainly deal with the coaches who are directly in the Bay Area, but then I also deal with the people who affect the people who are in further parts of the world. So I'm doing that. My wife and I run Warm Up and Workout. We do affiliate programming and lesson planning. And I surf a lot. I am just really enjoying life.
Surf a lot?
Yes. Yes. My commitment is 16 times a month right now.
Yeah, 16 times a month on a surfboard?
Yes.
There she is.
Oh, my God.
Yes.
That might be actually the majority full-time of your job.
No. I do other things more often, but I'm in the water 16 times a month.
That's incredible. And you live in Santa Cruz.
I do, so it makes it a little easier.
Yeah. Would you have a favorite break in Santa Cruz that you go to?
All over the east side. East side of Santa Cruz is awesome, but just kind of anything in Santa Cruz. I never realized how lucky I was to live there until I really got into the surfing culture.
If you, you're wearing all these different hats, you know, you've got so many things going on. How do you, define yourself right now? Obviously, you're mostly a father and husband, I would imagine, but outside of that, what do you think of yourself as an athlete, working professional? How do you think of yourself?
That's a great question. I'm heading down this road of a coach, but redefining what it means to be a coach, because I think fathers are coaches in a way. I think teachers are coaches. I think coaches are teachers. But I think the term coach is really underappreciated and not really well thought out. I think the definition of it in the dictionary is an athletic trainer. To me, that seems pathetic compared to the top-level coaches that I see. So my headspace and everything that I do in my life and how I define myself is as a coach. But I also want to redefine what it means to be a coach in almost all aspects.
Can you elaborate on that? You know, like, aside from an athletic trainer, what should a coach be? What should we be striving to be as coaches?
Take notes, Ben.
Oh, I'm taking notes.
Take notes.
This question is as much for me as it is for, you know, these thousands of people out here.
Yeah. I think the roles that people play as a coach classically in most of sport was they coached the elite, right? So the high-level coaches and the coaches that you know about were coaches that were, you know, run professional sports teams or are at high-level colleges or really good high schools or whatever it may be, or run a competitive team. And very rarely was there someone that was well-known who was just a coach of normal people. And they didn't have the same kind of impact. Those really high-level coaches didn't have a route to go to be successful in affecting change in normal people. Whereas CrossFit came around and really shifted that role. It was, you know, there was personal trainers, And I'm sure there was plenty of great personal trainers out there, but the number of people that a personal trainer can affect versus the number of people that a CrossFit coach can affect through their classes is dramatically different. It's much lower. So if you get a really high-level coach, somebody who can change and impact people's lives in the ways that we do within our facilities, they should be really considered super, super valuable. And the things that I think lead me to want to focus in this area is I think we are too narrow in our vision of what a coach is, and it's more centered around what they know rather than how they apply what they know to people and to situations. And I think the truly great coaches have this unique skill of connecting with people and giving them exactly what they need, not more, not less, and then getting them to whatever next stage they're at in their life.
And probably being able to change that method of delivery based on the person they're talking to, right?
Absolutely.
Because different people hear different cues differently and or need different levels of like personal touch and et cetera, that kind of stuff.
Absolutely, yes.
How do you work on developing that? Because that seems, that's sort of a feel, like a deafness that coaches have through experience and over time. It seems like that would be a hard thing to instruct someone how to do.
It is tremendously difficult, And for a long time, I couldn't put my finger on what I wanted to call this. You know, it's like you talk about coaches where you're like, the feel of the room was off. And it's like, how do you quantify that? And, you know, all their skills were right there, but something didn't feel right. Or, you know, they weren't as engaging as they could be or whatever it may have been. And for a long time, I had a really hard time putting my finger on what that was. And I was listening to a podcast, and I picked up the term emotional intelligence. And it's actually a really well-studied thing. And it's practiced in businesses around the world, but emotional intelligence is basically the ability to see the subtlety of human emotion and connect with people in an individual way. There's also a self-awareness associated with that, like realizing how you impact people, and when you say something, paying attention to the response. And it's this huge broad category of being emotionally aware. And I think the truly elite level coaches, that's what they excel in. It's not necessarily all the other stuff. It really is that emotional intelligence. They're deeply emotionally intelligent people with regards to themselves and with regards to meeting anyone else that they interact with.
Dude, I like that a lot.
Do you feel like somebody who has very low self-awareness can be a good coach?
To a point. So I think that somebody who has low self-awareness, depending on what their natural state of being is, so...
Like their demeanor, you mean?
Yes. Okay. So some people have a demeanor that's like over the top and loud and bubbly, and they like get in the middle of a group and they're entertaining and you can watch them. And that style of teaching is pretty generally applicable. A wide variety of people will feel attuned to that and then respond to that.
Their charisma, maybe?
Their charisma, yes. Yeah. But if that person can't connect with the individuals who that doesn't vibe with, then they end up losing those people. So I have this thing that I tell my coaches, which is you got to play to a majority and then tailor to a minority. So you find things that work across the larger group of people, you play to that, and being over the top and loud, engaging works to a bigger group of people, and then you can kind of tailor to the people who need something different. Now, somebody who's not emotionally aware, self-aware, won't be able to tailor because they won't realize that is not working for some of those people. They won't be able to see how they're impacting those people is turning out to be negative because they're not even paying attention to it. They are how they are. So I would say, yes, they can be effective, but I don't think they can ever be truly the greatest coach.
How are you finding ways to maybe develop that or draw that out of them? Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? If you have somebody who's maybe has a low EQ, or that's what we call emotional intelligence, right? Is EQ?
Yeah, EQ or IQ. EQ is EQ's emotional quotient.
Okay. So how do you draw that out of somebody? I mean, do you ask them questions? Do you have them fill out questions, like a test? Or
yeah, and that's an awesome question because that's what we're all trying to do now, right? That's what I'm trying to do now is, like, it's easiest to find somebody who's got a high level and then teach them all the other stuff than it is to find somebody who's got, like, all the other knowledge and all this other stuff and then teach them emotional intelligence. But the way I'm currently viewing it is I think people are on a spectrum. The reason that I linked emotional intelligence to training was I heard a podcast that was talking about this woman who had a form of Asperger's where she had zero emotional intelligence. And it was like, it wasn't like you have very low. It was she literally couldn't see it. And so she'd gone through like 7 assistants in a year, and she had just had all these strange interactions.
Did she know she had Asperger's?
No, she had no idea. So she's like 55, a doctor, and goes through like 7 assistants in a year, and finally one of them hands him like a Asperger's test that she takes it, realizes she's got this form of Asperger's, and she can't see human emotion. And so she's reflecting on all this stuff in her life of like, I just simply can't see when these subtle things happen. She can't hear sarcasm. She knows the big things, like when someone's frowning, they're probably mad. You know, when someone's crying, probably sad. But other than that, nothing. So when I heard that, I'm like, that's an example of somebody who has nothing. Like, no, like they have a disorder to where they don't have emotional intelligence. I believe everyone's on a spectrum, and there are people who are higher and lower. And I think with lower people, simply making them aware that something like emotional intelligence exists and forcing them to self-reflect, so like throw something out there and be like, I want you to pay attention to this person's response when you say this. So walk over and say that, and then take account of how that response happens, then step back and look at it. So giving them like one tool of like just being aware, because that's comes boils down to what it is.
Yeah, it's almost like skills and drills, right?
Exactly.
Like you're going to do a set statement, ask or say the same statement to 10 different people and monitor the reaction and just see what you can sense from it, right?
Yeah.
If you're low on the spectrum, maybe you as a coach, you know, Pat Barber, high on the spectrum, could say, all right, so you saw this, but what about this other thing? And they're like, oh, yeah, I didn't even think about that.
Right.
And so practicing that way one-on-one, you think is kind of the best way to develop it?
I think it's a great way. And I'm still, I mean, it's not perfect by any means. I don't, I mean, I'm new to this world of trying to teach something like this. So
well, this is a new world in general, what you're talking about. Developing coaches is, I mean, obviously NC Fit, you guys have a lot of resources and it built up some momentum that now this is possible. But, I mean, a lot of affiliates out there, this doesn't even enter their mind. They're just trying to find any coaches that are have decent knowledge.
Right.
Right?
Yeah, can you teach somebody a push press, right?
It's right, like, exactly.
But that's pretty shallow.
Super shallow.
Yeah, right?
And when you think about it, it's like I'd rather, instead of walking up to somebody and be like, hey, can you teach somebody a push press? I'd be like, hey, which person in this group of the classes does everyone gravitate to? And then be like, hey, I'm going to teach you how to teach this guy how to do a push press. Because that's the people who are going to, in the end, I mean, they already have that natural, like, focus gathered to them by other people. And then if you find out that, you know, they're the person after class high-fiving everyone who finished workout last and picked up the barbells and cleaned up other people's weights, like, that's what I look for first. Before the, hey, do you know how to teach a push press? Hey, did you get your level one? It's like, look for the other stuff first, because it's much, much harder to teach that.
So do you think that's advice you could give affiliate owners and, like, head coaches around the country and the world looking for new coaches is like, hey, let's reframe this. Look for people that have a naturally high emotional intelligence or that have some gravitas to them and then try to teach them the skills? Because that seems like that's not the way we're doing it.
Well, no, part of the problem is some affiliate owners are not like that.
Right? Yeah,
they're naturally emotionally intelligent.
They don't know themselves.
How are they going to know who it is?
Yeah, they're not going to know, right? So,
well, that's what always cracks me up is like I see these people. I mean, I love Jason's Box of Business, but some people are coming in being like, you know, my business is failing. Like, what did I do wrong? And you're looking at, like, numbers, and it's like, you don't have a product. Like, you don't have human relationships built up, because that's what this game is. It's not programming. Like, you can slap any program on the board. Like, a good CrossFit programs are free online. Even your program that your gym offers is probably on your blog. So if someone wanted your program, they can just go to your blog. What you're selling is human interaction, and you're selling coaching, and you're selling a community. And that's founded around emotional intelligence. It's founded around people who can connect with other people. And when an owner doesn't have that, it's like they're setting themselves up for almost failure. Like, how?
Well, you might be able to get lucky for a couple of years if there's no other competition in your area, and then it gives you a false sense of doing it right.
Yeah.
What would be a good litmus test maybe for an owner if they're listening to this podcast and they're like, is he talking about me? Right? Is Pat talking about me?
I'm thinking about it. Is he talking about me?
Yeah, I mean, well, you gotta wondering, okay, what's my litmus test, Pat? Like, that's what I'm wondering. Is like, is it me?
You got to be, I mean, the litmus test that you give for other people was, I mean, people talked about it before, but it's like can you sit in a car with them for like 3 hours and just hang out and chat? And nothing's weird about that. And that's a good one. Like, drive. Hey, we're gonna go to LA and back. Let's have a chat. Yeah.
Do you dread that trip, or are you looking forward to that?
Exactly.
Trip?
Yeah. Do you want to hang out with them outside the gym, or are they a little too awkward because of all the stuff they've been studying for the last 15 years? I think a good litmus test you can do for yourself is research emotional intelligence. Just Google it. Do Google emotional intelligence, EQ, IQ. There's actually like tests online.
Yeah.
There's multiple choice ones that you can click
what
through.
What type of personality you are, and then kind of understanding that and how you relate to other people.
Yep.
Yeah.
There's people who've ventured into this realm. They haven't really applied it to coaching, so to speak. They've applied it more to business development and how to like thrive in a teamwork environment or be a leader. But I think you can really take the time now to like let's apply this to the coaching world. Let's apply this to what we do. And I think it's the most impactful thing to do it here where we do, because we genuinely shape people's lives. That, I mean, as kind of arrogant as that sounds and as lofty as that goal is, like, you guys are both gym owners. You know the people who come into your gym with not just physically deficient, but mentally and psychologically broken people who can come in and find a community and find friends, like genuine people that they want to hang out with and sacrifice with and let go with. And creating that environment is a coach's responsibility. And if we can do the coaching side well in that, those regards, we can have massive impacts on thousands and thousands of people. I love this stuff, obviously. It's my entire life. But I really think we can do some amazing change.
Yeah, well, I think what's really cool about what you're saying is about how much impact you can have on those people, you know, whether they're psychologically deficient, physically, you know, their fitness is deficient, is you get something as a coach too, right? Like, you
Absolutely.
Feel a lot of reward when you actually help somebody like that
kind
of discover themselves or, you know, gain one iota of confidence. Like, for you, you go to bed, you feel good. For you in that interaction, you feel great. You go, like, this is why I do what I do,
right?
And you love it.
Right.
Which is awesome.
It's almost selfish. You know, like, you guys as gym owners know, like, if you can take pleasure in other people's successes, this job is for you. Like, when I'm in class and I tell somebody, hey, do this, and they do it and it makes their movement look better, I genuinely get excited because I'm genuinely excited that they're getting better. And if that's not you, maybe this is not the role for you, because that's what, if you talk about the grind and being a coach, that's the grind. You're doing the same shit all the time, but just to different people. And it's slowly making those successes happen over time and building these relationships. So
let's turn the focus to not the coach leading the class, but the person in the class or someone who's looking at a gym. How can they evaluate whether, you know, a coach or a gym owner does have this it factor, you know, this leadership, this emotional intelligence, other than, because, I mean, a one-time deal, the person could just be one of those, you know, charismatic, loud type of people.
Right.
What should a gym member look for in their class, other than the programming, to tell them whether or not they have the right place?
Okay. I would say, I mean, an easy one is names. Like, if that person who's coaching you knows your name, it's probably a good thing. They've taken the time to have that happen. Now, that's kind of a fake smokescreen, too. And then there's people who are on the other side of the spectrum who, like myself, I'm really bad with names. But I'll know everything about you, your family, where you work, all those other pieces.
Like, so, personal details.
Personal details. So if the coaches who's in the front of the class knows you, rather than you knowing them, like, if you walk up and they're like, hey, how's your family? Or they ask you about stuff that's not necessarily gym-related, it means they care about you on a deeper level than just you walking into their gym. And they care enough to reach out that way. So for me, I would say is if your coach is at your gym, A, you like them. If you just like
right,
them as
you
people.
You know that if you have a good feel.
Right. And B, they know something about you. They know something about either the way you move or the way you, you know, who your family is, or whether you have kids, or what you do for work, or, you know, whether you got a haircut last week. It's just the fact that they're paying attention to you, because in the end, that's their job, is to pay attention to you.
I love that. The first two things has nothing to do with programming, has nothing to do with how much equipment or how many assault bikes you have. It's just about, like, is your coach understanding who you are?
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah. Oh,
that's
yeah.
Huge.
Huge.
I agree, man. I've said that to our coaches before. Like, there needs to be something that you connect with each individual member. It doesn't have to be the same thing. Like, some people are naturally humorous people, and so you can have a running joke with somebody.
Totally.
Or other people are all about their family, and you need to ask about their kids. And whatever it is, like, making some sort of a personal connection beyond the workout, I think it's vital.
I think you had to find something that you like about each and every person that steps through the door of your gym. Right? Like, even if there may be somebody who you're just not like them at all.
Oh, yeah.
As a gym owner, you go, you know, you have to find something you like about it. Maybe it's just their work ethic. Maybe it's the fact that they're a parent or they're married or they're, you know what I mean? Like, you have to find some attribute that you like about them so you can connect with them on that level. You know what I mean? I think that's a really, really important thing to do.
Yeah. And I think if you don't naturally do that, it's going to be awkward and hard at first, but then it gets easier as you do it, just like any skill that you do. I think a lot of people are naturally not outgoing with, like, let me engage you. But you can start to learn these things and by simply just trying. Be like, okay, today I'm going to go in and I'm going to ask every person I talk to about their family. You know, and you just walk in and you're like, so, how's Christmas? Did you spend some time with your family? And you're like, we're doing thrusters. Why are you doing this? Like, and obviously, the stuff I'm saying is not during a workout. It's like, this is during, you know, the rest of the 60-minute class when you have a 10-minute workout.
Right, exactly.
There's plenty of time to build relationships. But yeah, I think just working on trying to get to know the people you have is a huge value add.
What do you do when you have a coach who's just not getting it? You're working with them, and you just, it's just not for them, right? This is like not for them.
Coaching?
Yeah. They really want to be a coach.
Yeah.
But say they don't have this EQ, and but you take them aside, try to give them some tips, and maybe it's just, you just know, hey, this is everybody's least favorite class because they don't connect with this coach.
Right.
What do you do in that situation as the head of coaching improvement development?
So it's a good question. It's hard because some people have their hearts really in the right place. I try to give as many opportunities as possible, and I try to support in as many ways as I can. So, like, I'll usually initially start off by being like, hey, here's some things, try this. And then let them go for a week and then come back and see how it is. If it's not different, then what I'll do is, okay, now we're going to do a more hands-on approach. I'm going to be right there with you. We're going to do a class. I'm going to tell you some stuff. I'm going to do another class. If you don't change the stuff from the last class, I'm going to tell you again. And I'm, like, really kind of up in their stuff. And at first, it's really passive and, like, hey, I'm here for you. And then for me, it gets progressively more aggressive where it's, like, if this doesn't change, you can no longer be a coach because it's just not working. It's not –
it's not the product that we want.
Exactly. And so I start always assuming that, like, there's some communication issue or there's something that needs to be developed. And I really try to put my effort into that, or I put my coaching director's effort into that, and have a lot of interaction. And you start kind of passive, seeing if people run with it on their own. Then you get deeper into it and maybe switch tactics, go a little bit more aggressive, a little bit more hands-on, see if you can make the change. And if it just doesn't work, some people are just not made to coach. And you just say, hey, you know, it's not working, and we got to end it.
So it sounds like you try to take it upon yourself almost, like, hey, maybe they're not a good coach because I haven't given them the tools.
Absolutely.
Right? So you're like, I'm not going to assume that it's them.
Absolutely.
You're going to assume it's yourself, right, and take those extra steps.
Yep.
Build that connection with that coach.
Yep.
And then see if they can make the change.
Yep.
And then if they can't, if you give them all the tools, you know how important this is to people and to the community.
Yeah.
So you have to then ask them to step down.
Yeah. And you got to walk the walk.
For
like,
sure.
If you got to take responsibility for your stuff. Like, if I'm developing someone, that's my responsibility. Yeah, can they go out and develop themselves? Sure. But it's my responsibility to make them better. So I'm going to do everything in my power to do so. I'm going to try every tactic in the book. And if they can't make it, then I'm not going to like hold that as like, ah, man, I totally failed. It might just not have worked. But I'm going to invest everything I can on whatever end of the spectrum to take responsibility for that person.
Is the evaluation process when you observe classes, or is it like member feedback, like on a weekly or biweekly basis? Like, how are you staying on top of these issues as they arise?
Yeah, so good question. It was definitely initially really hard because what happened was I shifted from being a coach full-time to being the full-time coaching director, right? So I coach a couple classes a week, and then other than that, my entire role was just making sure our coaching staff was good. We have 60 coaches in the Bay Area. 60.
That's a lot of coaches.
That is a nightmare.
That's as many members as a lot of gyms have.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah. And that's coaches in just the Bay Area. And it was just like, it was a nightmare. You know, it was like, even if I saw one a day, and I was driving, and our facilities are all over the place, so I couldn't like just skip between them. It was like I'm barely getting through all of them in 60 days. And that was... So you're looking at 2 months just to see everyone once. And not to mention, like, time schedules don't work that way.
And not to mention, if they see you in the room, they may not be giving...
Oh, they freeze!
An accurate, like, reflection of what their typical day is.
So what we did is we eventually ended up creating another position called a coaching director. And basically the way it works is within our facilities, we have an operator. An operator handles operations. They handle sales. They handle memberships. They handle emails. They handle community gatherings. And we have a coaching director who's responsible for product on the floor. They kind of represent the figurehead of what the coaches should be within that facility. And they're there, and they have a good pulse on the community, and they're constantly interacting with those. They're like the head coach. And
so you meet with them.
I meet with them, and right. I work really, really well with them and build my team and build like what our vision is and what our passions are, and you know, give them tools to go out and deal with their people. And I really work directly with them, and then if there's larger issues or if there's people who need more interaction, I go in and I sit with them. So sure. It makes it a much more manageable situation.
So what makes you, maybe turning the focus to yourself, Pat, what makes you better as a maybe coaching director or a development, head of coaching development, rather than still being on the workout floor?
Listening to podcasts like this one,
yeah.
Finding inspiration.
Yeah, I just want to know how that turns the corner to the point where it's like, is it out of necessity? Is
necessity.
Jason, yeah, and then Jason's like, hey, you're the guy who's willing to say what other people won't, or who's willing to sit down and have a face-to-face
that
other people won't.
It was along those lines. It was basically, we realized that the coaches that were coming out of my facility, watching me coach and being with me, ended up doing other things within our company. So I'd always like train up a coach and they'd go off and do something. They're like, damn, that was the guy who was going to cover my classes when I wasn't able to coach. You know, so it kept on being that case. So just the natural shift of it was I had to grow somehow. I couldn't just coach. I had to do something different because Jason and I were butting heads a lot on the fact that you guys know Jason pretty well.
Yeah,
Not many people originally told him, like, hey, Jason, that's a bad idea. And when I moved over there with my wife, we both were like, hey, Jason, these are bad ideas. And that we were like the first people who kind of were outspoken about that.
Bro, come on.
No, Jason, we're not going to do this EMOM. That is way too many reps to do in a minute. That's 70 reps in a minute. That's over a rep a second, Jason.
That's 20 calories on a salt bike and 20 thrusters on an empty barbell for 20 minutes? That makes sense.
Yeah, it total sense. So that being said, he saw someone in me, I think, who is strong enough to like offer opposing opinions and talk to people and go through those hard conversations. But I also had to have a lot of mental growth myself to get here. It was having a kid and turning 30, those things changed me more than anything else in my life because it forced so much self-reflection. You guys are both fathers. You know, when you have a kid, you immediately go, oh my goodness, I need to take a look at myself. I need to take a look at, you know, what I find important. Do I find myself important? Where do I put myself? Because like, I'm no longer the most important thing in the world. This thing is, this little ball of mush that I'm now responsible for. And then as they grow, you're like, everything I do, they're mimicking. Any sort of negative trait I have, any sort of inability to say I'm sorry or let go of something or confront a situation or a slightly lie, they're going to pick up. And I took that to heart, and it really allowed my psychology to change to where I can be self-reflective. And I think that's a really important thing to have in this role of developing other people, is to be able to be like, hey, I told you this, I was wrong, I'm sorry. Or when somebody says, hey, I don't think that's true, you go, huh, why don't you think that's true? And like, you can have a conversation about it rather than like, this is the way, we're moving on. So that was the thing that allowed me to turn the corner, was basically turning 30 and becoming a dad.
So did sport, did CrossFit kind of start that maturation process for you? Was there anything you could draw back on in terms of your 7 times the CrossFit Games or your development to a 215-pound snatch or whatever you have, you know what I mean? Like,
undercut me heavy there, bro. Jeez, 215
pounds. I just throw it in there, you know what I mean? But, you know,
Captain Torn Shoulder, high hang power snatch,
hey,
285.
290. Hey, dude, talk about undercutting somebody. It was 290, bro. 290.
275, thank you very much.
Okay, 275. Okay. Once.
Which is still an incredible achievement, dude. 275
snatch. I appreciate it.
At body weight,
170.
Okay, I haven't been 170 since 11th grade, so you win. I mean, I really mean that, though. Is there anything you took from your CrossFit career as an athlete that's kind of helped you in this process of developing coaches and developing yourself?
I don't know. I'm sure there is. I think, a unique perspective because I only ever did CrossFit. Like, I never was a Globo Gym person, so I only ever did CrossFit. And I only ever did CrossFit because it was a competition. I don't like working out. I like competing. I like seeing somebody else and going, I'm going to try to beat you.
So is there some like working out?
I've heard that you're a reluctant fitnesser.
Very reluctant fitnesser.
But, okay, so then is there anything from competition maybe that has kind of lent itself to a learning curve for you?
I mean, I think seeing how hard people work who are at the top was really, really surprising to me. It was, like, really surprising to me. Like, it seeing that I wasn't just kind of could naturally just hang, which I did for a number of years, and then watching what people were doing and seeing that it was possible really made me reflect on, you know, like, hey, if you really do want to get better at something, you have to try really, really hard. You have to make tons and tons of mistakes, and you have to put out the effort, and you have to do all these pieces. And I think being an athlete and being humbled by the other athletes around me allowed me to do that with my coaching in a lot of ways. And I kind of thought I just naturally took it all on, but then I went back and looked at all my journals, and I have thousands of notes, the same stuff written over and over and over again. I didn't realize I was doing it until I just happened to look back because I wanted to copy some old stuff. And it's like 11 journals, all full to the brim, with the exact same information, just like over. And I'm sitting here trying to teach other people, being like, why didn't you guys get that? And I'm like, wait a second, I've had 13 years in the game of having it beat into me from all this time. So I think what competition did inadvertently is it forced me to stay in the game longer than I maybe necessarily would have. And then it showed me that if I really want to excel, I got to work really, really, really hard, which is okay.
Well, it sounds like the work ethic that you saw in athletes, you're really putting into this coaching development process. It really does. It seems like you're learning from it, you're reworking it, you're constantly doing that kind of stuff. I feel like we could talk to you about this stuff all day, but if somebody wants help, would they be able to reach out to you? Is that something that people could do?
Yeah,
at this
absolutely.
Point?
Absolutely.
You said you're doing the thing with your wife for affiliate programming. Is there also coaching development for affiliates?
Yes, in a way. So basically, we do warm-up and workout. I don't know if you guys have checked it out, but basically we do full session plans. It's freaking legit. Like, I'm not going to pump myself too hard because it's mainly my wife who's the amazing brain behind it. But what happened was my wife, when I moved to New Zealand, I started coaching there, and I was always decent at dealing with people and decent at coaching workouts, but I wasn't the best basically programmer of the sessions. Like, I would come in with like an idea of what I wanted to do, but it'd be like, all right, let's do some shoulder rolls, let's, you know, leg kicks, let's run a 400, all right, let's get into the workout, you know, like, let's learn a movement, let's go in. And so that was my experience coaching. And when I met my wife and I moved to New Zealand, she was writing these detailed lesson plans the same way a teacher would to teach a class. It was like, here's from 0 to 5 minutes, you're going to be warming people up. Here's a general brief, you know, from this point, or sorry, not warming people up, you're going to be briefing people. From 10 minutes to 25 minutes, here's a general warm-up. Here's a skill-specific warm-up. And then here's the workout. And it's like, here's the things to look for in all these places. And so I'd sit there and I'd read them and I'd be like, oh, okay, this is cool. Never taught these things. How do I teach that? And I like go YouTube it and figure out how to teach. And I saw my coaching shoot through the roof. Like, I got significantly better at coaching. My knowledge base expanded just naturally because I was forced to teach new stuff. I had a plan for every class, so there's never those down times where I'm like, things are awkward, I don't know what's happening. And it made me such a more applicable coach. And years later, we were doing that for NC Fit, and I was like, you know, we should offer this to the world. We should offer these session plans. And so we did. We built a website up, and we started from just gym programming and amazing session plans. And my wife writes awesome session plans. Like, for 1 month worth of programming, it's about 70 pages worth of session plans.
Wow.
Like, every day is like studying for the SATs. So high-level coaches can skim through it and have a good idea of what to do and then apply it. Lower-level coaches are forced in developing themselves. They're forced into being, okay, what is this? How do I lay out my day? Here's how I'm going to do this. How am I going to do that within my gym? And they're forced to have this level of engagement that previously it was just like, wing it. Hey, figure it out. You know, like, go figure out your class, which is a cool skill to have, but it's a long process.
So if, like, I'm a athlete, I'm following some remote programming for my athletic development, mm-hmm. I check in with my coach. I send them numbers, right? Mm-hmm. I say, hey, I did this workout in X amount of time. I broke here.
Yeah.
What does somebody do who is an affiliate owner who's following your program?
Oh, they just reach out to me. They have all. Every one of them has my phone number. They all have my, you can text me, call me anytime, FaceTime, email. And it's I'm fully available through that.
It's a super personal thing.
Oh, absolutely.
People are able to connect.
Yeah.
If you don't mind me asking, how many people are taking advantage of this service now?
We've got a decent amount.
It's a lot of hours, a lot of phone calls, I'm sure you're fielding. If the lessons plans are that detailed, I mean, that's probably a lot of questions.
Kind of. Because they're so detailed and they're written so well, people just kind of get it. If there's something confusing, they shoot me a message. And what I find, too, is the people are using these as a gym, and all the coaches get together around it, and they study it together. So they kind of answer their own questions. And only if we've made, like, a mistake in clarity will something come to us. And it'll end up being like, hey, what about this? And more of the calls that I get are like, hey, I've got a couple coaches who are, you know, doing some random stuff in the corner, and I wanted to know how to get them more engaged in my community. How do I get them more engaged in my community? Because with regards to the coaching stuff, in general, they end up kind of sorting out themselves and creating these, like, tight-knit groups around development of their own ability.
You know what I like about it, too, is it kind of forces professionalism. If the whole hour is broken down by minutes, like, you're on it, you got to move on, and the coaches need to come up with a way to say stuff that is not going to exceed the time limit.
Other than, like, maybe a coach taking a couple pictures for social media purposes.
Right.
Like, they're not coaches sitting there on their phone for 10 or 15 minutes, right, you know, kind of wasting time, which you see at other gyms or you hear about at other gyms, right?
Absolutely.
Yeah. Well, I mean, if they're sitting on their – sorry, that's a huge pet peeve of mine. If a coach is, like, maybe checking, like, hey, what was that part of the warm-up again? I mean, they shouldn't be doing that, but if anything is going to be acceptable, like, that's the only thing that I'm going to find acceptable. It's just I see it sometimes where I'll watch a class and some coaches be like whipping it out and texting as they walk through. I'm like, you son of a...
Ben Alderman updated his Facebook status. He's feeling sad.
Yeah. Do you do that all the time?
Yeah. No, I'm just kidding.
Oh, you son of a gun.
No, I'm just saying. If I did that during class, right? Yeah. Like, it'd be like, why is he updating his status here? It's like, checked into Iron Mile. I'm always here. Sad face. Not good. So if people are trying to check out what you guys are doing, I mean, you got a lot of cool stuff going on.
Yeah.
Where should they follow you? What should they do?
Right. And how often are you posting, like, videos of you surfing?
I post videos of me surfing. I actually posted one the other day, but it's hard to get footage of me surfing. It's like, I have to, like, without being a goober and just paying someone to come out and film me. Like, I'm not going to do that. So I have, like, a couple photos that randomly people took.
Ali, come take some pictures.
Yeah, I did once for my birthday. I was like, Ali, come out, and he got some great photos. But if people want to find me, just warmupandworkout.com. And we have tons of freebies. So we have, like, 2 free weeks on there, or 7 free days, so you can check out that. We've also got a kids program, so same thing for kids programming. A teens program, so same thing for teens programming. We have a competitor add-on that basically, it's a gym competitor thing. So the way we do it is we use the programming for the classes as your GPP, and then the other stuff just rounds out that GPP. So, and I noticed we've been doing this for a while. Matt Chan just started doing a similar thing. And Matt and Eric for the win, Train for the Win, they're doing a similar thing. But they use that GPP, the class workouts, to keep their athletes engaged in the class and then have supplemental stuff on the side.
So just to maybe further delineate what you're doing, is what Jason and JP are doing with Box of Business more on the administrative, marketing, business side. You guys are really kind of doing stuff on the, you know, like you said, the product on the floor. That's your focus. So would it be something in the future where you guys are going to do not Box of Business seminars, but, you know, your own seminars where you're going to be meeting with affiliate owners?
I mean, potentially. The reason that I haven't kind of headed that direction right away is I want to make sure whatever I'm giving is unique. I want to make sure it's unique in mine. I never want to step on HQ's toes and just be like, I'm re-giving a level one. Like, that's bullshit.
Right.
Like, that's not my content. If I give anything, I want it to be incredibly tangible. I want it to be really well thought out, and I want it to be mine.
Sure.
And if that's the case, then I'm more than happy to step in and help other people.
Cool.
And we haven't gone that route yet. But I'm more than happy to help with anything. We do a lot of free videos. I do a lot of Q&As where people ask me a question. I'll do a minute response for Instagram on Warm Up and Workouts on Instagram. I'm just trying to do my very best to help a demographic of our community that's actually smaller than most, but I think is the most valuable component to what the CrossFit community can offer, is that those coaches, those people.
So for now, follow through the website. Go to the website.
Yep.
Check out Warm Up and Workout on Instagram.
Yep.
That's right. I'm going there right after this episode ends.
I will happily send you everything we have.
Thanks a lot, Pat, for joining us. Remember, guys, follow us at BTB Podcast on Instagram and Facebook. Go to iTunes, subscribe to the podcast, give it a 5-star rating. Pat, we'll see you next time, man.
Yeah, thank you, guys.
Thank you so much, man.